This podcast is brought to you by Money Control.
Hello and welcome to Money Control. I'm Kirtana and you're listening to Simply Save, our personal finance podcast. We just completed season 3 and we hope you took a lot of advice about mutual funds and how to invest in them. We're just about to start season 4 in a couple of days. But before that, we've got a lot of queries and feedback that you guys have sent us. I'm here with Kezad Adjania to answer some of them. Hi Kezad.
Hi Kirtana.
We've got a lot of queries and a lot of them seem to be from like 20-year-olds.
Okay.
There are a lot of 20-year-olds
okay.
who've mailed us.
Okay.
So shall we get on with the questions?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Shoot.
The first one is about how to open a DMAT account. So the person wants to know, can you help me with the various service charges or variables that I should look for when opening a DMAT account?
Okay, so a DMAT account, okay, something that many of us open, okay, but the reader hasn't told us, right, that whether he or she wants to invest in stocks or just in mutual funds or both, right?
Yeah.
So you can invest in mutual funds also through a DMAT mode, but if you want to invest in stocks, in direct mm-hmm. equities, then you have to have a DMAT account.
Yeah.
Okay. If you just want to invest in mutual funds, there is no real pressing need to open a DMAT account. But since the reader hasn't clarified whether he wants to invest just in mutual funds or even in stocks, we'll leave that.
Okay.
Let's focus on the DMAT account. Okay. How to open a DMAT account? Well, it's pretty simple. There are depository participants. There are several DPs, like how there are banks when you go and open a bank account. Similarly, there are DPs when you go and open a DP account.
Okay.
Right. So a DP, it could be an independent entity by itself, or
okay.
most of the banks are also DPs.
Oh,
many brokers are also DPs.
Okay.
Okay. Because why do you need brokers? Brokers help you buy shares. Okay.
Yeah.
So you need to have a broking account also. But they said that they are also DPs. So that, you know, your deposit, your DMAT also is with them. Your broking account also is with them. And all you then need is a bank account from which you can transfer your money to your broker whenever you buy shares.
Okay.
And vice versa when you sell shares and money comes into your bank account. So you have to figure out where do you want to go. If there's a broker who is offering you a DP facility, then you go and open a DP with your broker. Or let's say if you have an account with a bank, and if you have a relationship going on with your bank,
okay.
and if your relationship manager helps you, or there's an advisor in your investment advisor is there in the bank that
okay.
helps you buy and sell mutual funds or stocks and all that,
mm-hmm.
then you can definitely open a DMAT account over there as well.
Okay.
Okay, so that's how you basically do. So sometimes what happens is that banks say that, you know, we'll offer you a 3-in-1 account. We'll offer you a trading account. We'll offer you a DMAT account. We'll offer you a savings bank account.
Okay.
So we'll waive off some charges, but you open all three of these things with us. So those schemes are also there.
Okay.
Basic charges, there are now, okay, specifically about charges. Now there are different DPs will charge you different
mm-hmm.
charges. So there is no uniformity.
Okay.
In that. Okay. Also, ideally, you shouldn't go to a place that allows you completely free everything.
Okay.
Because there's always a price to pay later on.
Okay.
Plus, you have to see the service standards. So, ask around your friends, your relatives, your family as to if you're satisfied with a particular DP participant, depository participant, if you have any particular DMAT. No, usually, you know, if you deal with a broker, then the broker only opens a DMAT account with him.
Okay.
Okay. So, there are account opening charges which have to be paid
okay.
at the time of opening. Then there are annual maintenance charges, could be anything between 700 to 1000 rupees or it could be less than 500 rupees also
okay.
per year annual rent that
okay.
you have to pay to your DP. Okay. Then suppose, let's say if you have some physical shares with
mm-hmm.
you, if you want to dematerialize them and if you want to convert them into DMAT, then you'll have to pay a price per share per company.
Okay.
That also sometimes they waive off if it's a large quantity, if you're a large customer already with them into other relationships.
Okay.
Or if you're a fresh customer, they might charge a nominal value, like
okay.
0.5% or 0.05% of the value of the shares.
Okay.
So those are called dematerialization charges. Like for example, it could be 15 rupees a certificate.
Okay.
Share certificate, right?
Yeah.
A share certificate is a share certificate.
Mm-hmm.
Could be 15 rupees per share certificate, could be 20 rupees per share certificate, those kind of charges.
Okay.
Sometimes what happens is if you have already shares in DMAT and if you want to rematerialize them, meaning you want to convert them back into the physical money, there are charges over there as well.
Okay.
Okay. Every time you buy and sell a share, sometimes the DMAT DP participant also imposes some charges. Like if there's an action in your DP account, like for example, if you buy a share, some minor charges, or if you sell a share, some minor charges, okay. You know, those kind of things.
Okay.
As I said, there is an annual maintenance fee that you have to pay. Okay.
How much is that?
Annual maintenance fee could be anything from 700 rupees to 1000 rupees.
Okay.
Could be even more also.
Does it depend on where I open the account?
Exactly. So okay. it depends from person to person. So okay. Those are the different charges that you have to look out for.
So the person needs to inquire based on where they want to.
Correct. Open so the key to opening a good DP or with a DP that who matches you, okay. You have to first see your existing relationships, whether mm-hmm. they offer a DP or not. Okay. If they offer you a DP, it's always better that everything remains in one architecture.
It's easier for them as well.
It's easier for you to move funds. It's easier for you to for servicing after sales, any customer support that you need to have.
Okay. So let's move on to the next question.
Okay.
This person asks, how do I go about choosing the right fund? What's the easiest way? And should I go by CRISIL rating?
Okay, so we'll come to ratings a little later. Let's first start by choosing the right fund. Okay, so there are mutual funds, all sorts of mutual funds. Okay, mm-hmm. There are mutual funds that cater to your needs that could come up in the next 1 month. To next 3 months, to 6 months, to 1 year, to 3 years, to 5 years, and 15 years, and even 20 years also. So first you need to decide with what you want to do with your money.
Okay.
Do you want to just park it temporarily at a place before you deploy it elsewhere? Or do you really want to invest it? Okay. Why are you saving? Mm-hmm. Ask yourself that. So do you want to like buy a car? Do you want to buy a... Do you want to go on a holiday? Do you want to save your money for a future education? Do you have marriage or do you have retirement? First, fix yourself a goal and then see how far that goal is from you, how big that goal is from you, and then you decide the path that you want to take to reach that goal. Suppose, let's say, if you want your money for a very short period of time, like for the next, let's say, 6 months to 1 year, maybe you might want to consider a liquid fund.
Okay.
You want to park your money for, let's say, or rather if you want to invest your money for the next, let's say, 3 or 4 years, then maybe a short-term debt fund, a mix of short-term debt fund, a little bit of a good, well-managed credit risk fund, you know, those kind of funds. Mm-hmm. But let's say if you want to invest your money for anything beyond 5 years, then a little bit of equity is definitely warranted.
Okay.
Like, for example, if you are, let's say, if you're in your first job, which could be about at the age of 21, 22 years, right?
Yeah.
And you say that I want to get married, but I want to fund my marriage out of my own expense. I don't want to depend on my parents for my marriage. Okay.
Yeah.
So let's say you have a good 7-8 years to go. So you have enough amount of time for you at your disposal, invest in an equity fund. Mm-hmm. You know, that is how you should decide whether you, how much of equity and how much of debt you should have.
Yeah.
Now, as far as choosing the best fund is concerned, there is no such thing as the best fund.
Mm-hmm.
What is the right fund for me? That is what you should be asking,
okay.
Which is what I already told you, that this is how you choose a right fund. Okay. There is no such thing as a best fund, because in any given point in time, there could be about 100, 200 equally well-performing funds.
Yeah.
Okay. So, today's number one can become tomorrow's number two. Today's number five can become tomorrow's number one. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But there could be hardly any statistical difference between the number one and number 10 also.
Okay.
But obviously, having said that, you have to take a look at the fund's past track record.
Yeah.
There's a very important statistic that every mutual fund gives.
Okay.
Can you guess what that is?
Is it the amount of returns that it gains every few years?
Yes, so that's one, but that's only half the answer. The other answer is basically the benchmark return.
Okay.
So every mutual fund is supposed to compare itself against a particular benchmark.
Okay.
The trick here is to see whether the fund has outperformed the benchmark on a consistent basis.
Okay.
That information is publicly available. You can go to a fund's website, take a look at the past, let's say 1 year, 3 year, 5 year, 10 years, whether the fund is consistently outperforming its benchmark.
Okay.
If the fund is outperforming its benchmark index, benchmark index could be what? Your could be your Nifty, Sensex.
Oh yeah.
Those kind of commonly available indices.
Okay.
If your fund has outperformed the benchmark on a consistent basis, then your fund is reasonably, in fact, your fund has done well.
Okay.
Then, as in when you get more evolved in your investing process, as you get more knowledgeable, try and compare within a particular category, where does your fund stand?
Okay.
How has your fund done in a particular category?
Okay.
This information is not very easy to find. You have to dig in a little bit. So you have to go to third-party websites, like you said, CRISIL. Fine, CRISIL is an external independent research firm, reputed mm-hmm. one.
Yeah.
There are several others also. Morningstar okay. is one, Value Research is one. Go on the website. Okay. See in those particular category, where does your fund stand? Okay. As I said, don't be so obsessed with number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. As long as it's in the middle continuously, done well in the
performing
benchmark.
One.
Yeah.
Okay.
Then you're good. But as I said, performance is one, is number two. First is the appropriateness of the fund to your needs.
Okay.
If you are going to put your fund, if you need the money, let's say within 1 year,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
You don't need to pick the best equity fund.
Okay.
That fund, the equity fund that is out there could be the best equity fund mm-hmm. of all.
Yeah.
Okay. But for a 1 year time horizon, you actually don't need a equity fund at all. So
yeah.
that's what I meant by saying appropriateness. That's very, very important.
Okay.
Because if there is a mismatch in the appropriateness, then no matter how rockstar the fund has been in the past, it will be useless to you.
Okay. Understandable. There's a similar question. It's about small caps, large caps and mid caps. So this person asks, I'm 25 years old.
Okay.
Can you tell me how to choose my fund based on the size of the stock?
Okay. So if you are young, that young, 25, I'm assuming that you're starting out to invest.
Yeah.
Start gradually. Start by investing in large cap funds.
Okay.
Because these are your time tested funds. They invest in time tested, well managed, large size companies that have been around for a long period of time.
Yeah.
Large cap funds are also less risky and less volatile as compared to mid and small cap funds.
Yeah.
So every portfolio, think of it like a pyramid. Your base should be strong. If your base is strong, then you can add up to your base.
Okay.
So if your base only is weak and very aggressive, then the whole pie will collapse. So start off with a low risk, low volatile, more diversified, which is your large cap fund.
Okay.
After a couple of years of gaining confidence about investing in mutual funds, doing your SIPs, I hope that you do your SIPs regularly for the first at least couple of years. And then after that, you can increase your tempo a little bit by one mid-cap fund or one small-cap fund that way.
Okay.
So eventually you will have a well-diversified portfolio.
Okay. So another question is, in one of the episodes, you mentioned that the beginner investor should have a SIP, a debt fund and an equity fund.
Correct.
Can you tell me more about debt fund and equity fund?
Okay. I said you should have a debt fund and an equity fund, and you should have an SIP in both. SIP is not a different product.
Oh, yeah.
You can't say an SIP and a debt fund and an equity fund.
Okay.
A debt fund and an equity fund is a product.
Okay.
An SIP is a facility. An SIP is a mechanism by which I can invest my money regularly without interference. Now, that SIP can go into an equity fund as well as a debt fund.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's what I meant. Now, a debt fund is something that you need for a short-term purpose. A long equity fund is something that you need for a long-term purpose.
Yeah.
Okay. So a debt fund is less volatile compared to an equity fund. It is less risky compared to an equity fund.
Okay.
But with the additional risk that you take with an equity fund, you also have the potential to earning that much higher returns also from an equity fund. Which is why you should go to an equity fund also.
Huh.
Not just a debt fund and not just an equity fund, but you should have a balance of both.
Yeah.
But always remember, an equity fund is obviously more volatile than a debt fund, but it doesn't mean that you don't invest in an equity fund. You invest in an equity fund, but then you stay invested for a period of at least 5 years.
Okay.
If you stay beyond 5 years, it kind of minimizes volatility, and then the chances of giving negative returns deteriorates, reduces as your investment tenure goes. We've done this study in Money Control. You can read up on our previous articles also, like what exactly is long-term. Even this year, many people say that my SIPs are not working. You know, because of the market volatility, people have been sitting on negative SIP returns. They've been doing SIPs for the past 3 years, 4 years, 2 years, but they're not getting any returns.
Okay.
So then we did a study with CRISIL saying that, you know, the advantage of doing an SIP over a long period is that it reduces the chances of earning negative returns. You just have to be a little patient.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it should be a little longer than that period that they've been.
So the study which we had done previously with CRISIL said that, you know, if you invest in an SIP for at least a period of 6 years, your chances of making negative returns drop below like 3%, 2%, and beyond 8 years, historical statistics, I'm saying beyond 8 years and 9 years, there is no chances that you will make negative returns in SIP. That is not a guarantee.
Okay.
It is a study based on empirical evidence.
Okay.
It could change a little bit here and there.
Okay. This is just like how we covered throughout the season where we spoke about being patient and
correct.
Also diversifying
correct.
The previous point.
Correct. Both are required.
Yeah. So I come to the last question.
Okay.
How do I manage the returns when my mutual fund matures?
Okay. When your investment gets over and when you redeem your money.
Yeah.
Okay. Money obviously comes in your bank account. Now, the key to remember over here is that you don't just, it's an open-ended fund. Most of the mutual funds are open-ended funds, right? So it's not that the scheme matures. It's not that the money matures.
Yeah.
You initiate a redemption. You want the money, so you initiate the redemption. If you don't initiate a redemption, your money will stay invested.
Okay. So even if I say, if I market for 10 years,
correct.
It would still stay, the money would
50
stay?
Years. It will stay there for 50 years if you don't touch it.
Okay.
I'm assuming that the mutual fund also is around. If your mutual fund is only not around, then your money will come back to you.
Okay.
But that's a different thing. But otherwise, if you don't redeem your money, your money will stay there. Even if you have earmarked it for, let's say, a 10-year horizon.
Okay.
You have to initiate a redemption.
Okay.
Now, when do you initiate a redemption? When, of several reasons. You want the money.
Okay.
Okay. Your goal has arrived. You need
okay.
that expense has arrived. Mm-hmm. So, you need to make that expense. So, you need the money.
Okay.
That is one thing. Secondly, is that, you know, something has gone wrong with that fund house. Something has gone wrong with the scheme. It's not doing well. The fund manager has left. Or the fund house itself is getting sold to somebody else.
Okay.
So those are reasons also why a lot of people withdraw their money, and rightly so.
Okay.
You should not withdraw the money just because you want to time the market, or you said in your mind that, you know, I had earmarked this money for 10 years. Abhi 10 years ho gaya. So what will I do? I will withdraw the money. But then what are you going to do with that money? If you don't have a vision of using that money, you may as well stay invested.
Yeah.
Otherwise, please use that money. Use it for your house, or use it for a holiday. Use it for some purpose in your life.
Okay.
Because you have to use your money. It's your money.
Yeah.
Right? So think about what you want to do with your money at the start of your investment.
Mm-hmm.
And when you come towards that goal, that's how you redeem your money. And that's why you redeem your money. And that's how you use your money.
Okay.
Don't time the market. Just because you feel that, you know, the markets are too volatile, let me remove the money. No, that is not the right way of managing your money. You will lose your money. You will burn your fingers.
Okay.
It sounds very preachy, and it sounds very easy to say, because when the markets are tough, we know what we go through, right? We go through a lot of uncertainty. But uncertainty and good returns are a part and parcel and a package of the stock markets investing. Okay.
Yeah.
You have to endure both in the long run. So don't worry about that.
Okay. That's really insightful, Kezar. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
And now a word on a subscription product. Money Control Pro offers actionable investment ideas, independent research, insights and analysis from the world of business, economy, politics and policy. Get access to Money Control Pro at ₹599 for a year. Use code GETPRO. For more information, check out the Money Control website or mobile app.
Listeners, I hope this has answered some of your questions, and we are really excited to bring out the next set of episodes, that is from season 4. That's a wrap on this podcast. If you have any more questions, Kezar would be more than happy to answer them, and you can write to us at mcpodcast@nw18.com. I repeat, that's mcpodcast@nw18.com. For more news, views and updates, stay logged on to Money Control. Thanks for listening.